Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Starting a family is undoubtedly an exciting time. But the reality of seeing a positive pregnancy test can send even the most laid-back woman into a spiral of sleepless nights. Trust me, I've been there. We're here to tackle the conundrums that keep many mums-to-be, just like me, awake at night when they find out their life is about to change forever. Hello and welcome to Baby on the Brain, a podcast brought to you by Stylist Magazine, dedicated to the big life questions you face when you find out you're pregnant. My name is Fliss, I'm the digital executive editor at Stylist and I'm pregnant with my first child. Every week I'm joined by a different co-host and today I'd like to introduce my first co-hosting duo, Sarah and Laura Smith of the Smith Story fame. The couple run a family-based Instagram influencer account detailing life as proud mums to daughter Annabelle and their soon-to-be new addition to the family, as Laura is 16 weeks pregnant. Together, we're going to be tackling the big life questions about being feminists through pregnancy and motherhood, and if it's possible to raise girls and boys, avoiding gender stereotypes. Welcome, Sarah. Welcome, Laura. Thank you so much for joining us on Baby on the Brain, and a million congratulations on your pregnancy. How are you feeling, Laura?
Oh, thanks for having us. I'm feeling really pretty good now. Thank you. I had a rough first trimester, but I'm very happy to be in that easing of the second trimester.
Oh, I remember that so well. And now I'm in the third trimester. It's all coming back to haunt me. I feel like I'm grumpier than ever.
Watch out, Sarah.
Today, we're here to discuss all things feminism and motherhood, which is a huge topic. So I think we're just going to stick to a few key points. But as a feminist and an intersectional feminist myself, I've been thinking about what that means during pregnancy and motherhood. And I'm going round and round in circles about my values and where I stand. Where do you guys sit on this topic?
That is a very good and big question. I think certainly as one of the half of the duo that's been pregnant, I think it is a really interesting point of view, because actually when you're pregnant, it makes you question a lot of the things that you had never really considered before. I think you suddenly start questioning how you're going to influence the future generation and therefore how you are kind of living your life and what that means. And I think in some ways it kind of made me feel even more of a feminist, because I started looking around thinking, actually, that's not right. And I want to make a change so that my daughter grows up and doesn't face those same challenges. So I think, you know, when I think of feminism, I think of equality and I think of women being equals. And that really hit a nerve, because, you know, even as a woman, you look around and you go, okay, that's not fair, that's not equal. But when you're fighting for your future child, that's a very different kind of point of passion for me, because I'm just like, well, no, there's no way that should be okay now, let alone be okay for our daughter. So I think for me, it raises issues I hadn't considered before, certainly.
And we're a lot more passionate, I'd say, about it now than we were before. Of course, we were always feminists, but now, I feel much...
We're active feminists.
Yeah.
If that's the thing. We're far more vocal about it. And I think when you're pregnant and you have to, I guess, kind of stand up for yourself, that gives you a new strength. So actually being a pregnant woman is the first time you're ever really in that situation where you're controlling not only your future, but your baby's future. Mm. And that is something really powerful, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think the second thing I wanted to touch on before we bring in our guest, and we will talk to her about feminism and motherhood, and I'm really sure she's got some strong opinions on how we can all tackle that. But it's a slightly different element to the conversation, but it's all linked in. It's about raising children without gender stereotypes and whether that's possible. And I suppose my question to you guys before we start grilling our guest is, did you want to do that before you had Annabelle? Was that a decision you made? And if not, did you think about it?
Absolutely. I think we were very conscious from before Annabelle was born that we wanted her to like things that she liked, not things that were for girls. So I think we've done a pretty good job at that. We've introduced her to an array of things, but also we take the lead from her. You know, she, Annabelle has likes things like dolls. She likes baby dolls. She likes football. She likes buses. She has such a good varied interest. And I think some of that is because we did make that decision that we were very conscious. We don't want her to just dress in pink, and we don't want to just introduce her to things we wouldn't introduce if we had a son. Yeah. But at the same time, with a lot of our parenting has been really led by her. And so we've done a lot of just being conscious of what she shows a tendency towards and encouraging that no matter what it is.
Yeah. But I think to your question, is it possible, is a really, really good one, because I think ultimately being parents, there's only so far your influence is going to hold up. And the younger they are, the greater that influence is. But actually, as soon as they're out of your house, they're in different environments, there's still this perception that girls are going to want to do girls things and boys are going to want to do boys things. And I don't know that even people consciously think that's a girl thing or that's a boy thing, but certainly we've bought a doctor's kit for Annabelle, and there was the kind of off-the-cuff comment of, oh, are you going to be a nurse?
Or we nurse Annabelle, and we were like, oh no, she's Dr. Annabelle.
And it was just a throwaway comment by a family member, and nothing was meant by it. There wasn't any kind, it was just, well, girls grow up to be nurses. And actually, you know, when she was kicking the football around the garden, it was kind of like, oh, you know, that's nice. And we were like, well, no, actually, we're thinking about putting her in football club. Oh, well, won't that be where all the boys are? Well, so
maybe
she'll be just as good as the boys or better than the boys. It's not, you know, that for me, or certainly for us, we've never just gone, right, that's a girl's thing, that's a boy's thing. Even for us personally, there's not a girl's thing and a boy's thing. So I think
we probably have a bit of a unique perspective, being that we don't have heteronormative gender roles within our own family. So we don't have, but we just base things on what our actual skills are, as opposed to like what would be the husband's job and the wife's job.
Yeah.
And so I think we kind of have gone down that same road with Annabelle. So what I'd say is, within your own household, you might be able to do a decent job of raising without gender stereotypes, but because there's so much outside influence, all you can really do is prepare them for that world, and prepare them that other people are going to think that they may not be able to be a doctor. But in fact, because you've instilled these qualities in them, you know, they know they can be a doctor, and they'll go after that if that's what if that's what they want.
Yeah. And it is funny having a sassy 2-year-old who is quite ready to tell other people that they are wrong. So I'm hoping that's a sign that we've done a good job. She is ready to tell any boy to get to the cooking or the cleaning certainly from her world perspective, there is no gender roles, there are no you do this, I do that kind of thing. It's just everyone's equal.
So she is going to single-handedly unpick the unconscious bias of the nation.
I certainly wouldn't want to cross her.
Yeah.
True. She certainly knows what she believes to be right.
I mean, it sounds awesome. I think we should bring in our guest to help us decipher what's going on here, and to understand a little bit more another person, another mum's opinion of feminism and motherhood and pregnancy and all of these very big questions that we're posing right now. So it is my pleasure to announce that Sarah Jane Crawford joins us today. Sarah is the star of screen and radio with years of presenting shows across major British networks, including ITV, BBC and Channel 4. Alongside her hit radio show, Sarah has launched A Womb of One's Own, a podcast exploring the differences and feelings of women across the nation navigating their biological clocks and fertility stories. She's also a mother of one. We're thrilled to have you here with us today, Sarah Jane. You've been listening from the wings. Let's start with the big question. Where you stand on feminism and pregnancy and motherhood and all of that amazingness?
Very big questions and very big answers. So I grew up as a bit of a tomboy, to be honest with you. And I was always very anti anything that was kind of like typical girly. You know, I hated wearing dresses, and I was my mum's first daughter. So she would always laugh and say to me later in life, you know, I always dreamed about putting dresses on you, and you were just like, no. So I'd always be tearing around in like my favorite jumpsuit and trousers, and I was always arm wrestling the boys, and I was in a football club as well, and I was like the only girl there. And but it was funny because I did have like crushes on boys, but the funny thing is that I would like use my love of football to like get chatting to them. So I would like be a tomboy, but like still have like these crushes on boys and be chatting to them. But like, do you know what I mean? But getting in there with them with lad speak, it was the weirdest thing. And that's how I kind of grew up. But I always had like a lot of female friends as well. Like I am a real girl's girl. I wouldn't say that I was one of these girls. And when I say one of these girls, I just mean that I know that there can sometimes be a girl who prefers male company because they just have more in common with men. I wouldn't say that I'm that. I would say I definitely am able to be like one of the lads, but at the same time, I love, you know, female company and I love girl chats. And for me, as I've gotten older as well, I've really appreciated that there are certain things that I think that women do need each other for, especially when it comes to things like pregnancy. And I think that the experience of being a parent is different man to woman.
It's an interesting point, actually, because when I was doing my reading earlier, I did see women are almost brought up differently to think about parenthood differently. Boys aren't brought up to think about being parents or any of that, whereas girls are brought up to think about, I don't know, their future as a mother. But that's why boys... it's crazy.
No, it's so strange, actually, because having this kind of genderless upbringing that Annabelle's having, where we haven't kind of put anything on her in terms of what you should do, one of the strangest things for us is that she is so maternal to her dolls.
Oh, yeah.
Just naturally. Like, one of her favourite things, if she's not racing cars or kicking a football, is to mother these babies.
And we are not us. I've never liked baby dolls.
No, we didn't buy her a doll. We wouldn't even have thought to buy her a doll. She just found some dolls at my parents' house, and the next thing is she's making their bed and feeding them. And so there is this kind of natural encouragement of her as a parent, which is a weird thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's so strange, because when you talk to other mums with boys, that's not necessarily what their experience is.
Yeah, maybe sometimes. But also what I found, I found interesting was, so I was a non-bio parent when Sarah had Annabelle. And day two, after Sarah's C-section, she had to go in for an appointment. And I was left with Annabelle, and she just wanted milk, and she was crying and screaming, and it was so upsetting. And then I noticed that all the dads in the room, like, didn't seem to care. Of course they cared, but they didn't seem to feel like they should be able to calm their child down. But it was an interesting point of view for me, because as a mom, I really felt like I should be able to solve this. I should be able to stop her crying, but because I didn't have the milk, I couldn't do it. And it was really upsetting for me. But I did think in that moment, I found it really strange how, dads are kind of they expect to not be able to be the comfort to their child, I think, early on. And that's just, and they can't a lot, you know, most times, I suppose they can't, because a lot early days, all they want is that milk and that comfort. And so it is interesting, I thought, because I found it very, very difficult.
Yeah. Sarah Jane, just going back to you, what I wanted to ask you actually was, it sounds like your mum totally supported you in not pushing gender stereotypes. Although she wanted to put you in dresses, she was there helping you go into football club. You know, it sounds awesome, very progressive.
Yeah, I don't, you know what it is? So they were quite progressive anyway, because I was adopted. So my brother and I, my older brother and I were both adopted. And then down the line, my mum ended up having biological children and they thought that she couldn't have children. So that's a bit of a crazy story in itself. But so I wouldn't say, when we use the word progressive, it makes me think about people who are, I would say that she was progressive, or my mum and dad were able to go through like extensive assessments, you know, because obviously when you adopt, you know, it's a good couple of years of being assessed and everything. So obviously they had a really good mindset in terms of, you know, what it took to be a parent. I don't think she was probably like new age in that she wouldn't push, you know, like thinking,
yeah,
I'm going to keep it like neutral. I just think that I was such a bull in a china shop. And now I've got my own mini bull in a china shop, and my mum laughs and she's like, that's how you were. And I'm like, I can't cope. She's here, she's everywhere. So I think I was just literally just like that. I was really headstrong. And I always think about nature nurture all the time, because I think about it because I was adopted. I think about it because of how important it is to be a good parent and how much impact you can actually have before there's so much, you know, like control you don't have. I think about it because I'm now a new mum. And I think that I was naturally somebody who was very sporty, very confident, and just liked being very physical and wasn't very girly. I did have a couple of dolls that I really liked. I don't think I was one of these young girls who would sort of emulate being a mum.
Okay, so the first thing I wanted to kind of quiz you on was, well, I suppose the point I wanted to make was, I found my feminist values challenged by Mother Nature during pregnancy. There is no getting away from the fact that in heterosexual relationships, men cannot play an equal part in pregnancy. And I also think in motherhood, because physically, mentally, you do end up taking on a lot more than guys. So my question to you would probably be, how can I reconcile that in my mind? Because the feminist inside me is screaming. And every time he asks me to do something like help him put the bins out or the dishwasher, I'm incensed, because I'm like, do you know what I'm doing every day? I'm growing eyeballs today. Are you joking? I don't know. It's just been something that's been playing on my mind.
Do you know what? First of all, even if you're not pregnant, don't put the bins out. Let him do that always. Let him always do that. No, do you know what? For me, what really resonated with me when you said about challenging feminist values was that, extending on from the whole thing of growing up as a young girl who felt very much wanting to always, I was very conscious as a young girl to always wanting to be doing, I can do just what the boys can do. I used to think like that all the time. And then things change a bit, you know, you go through puberty and you start to identify with the real differences between you and boys. And then, you know, maybe you get into your first relationship from sort of like, you know, 17, 18 or whatever. And then it does kind of start defining differences, or for me it did anyway, in heterosexual relationships, right? But I still had this idea in my head that, you know, I didn't want to be the little woman at home. And when I say the little woman at home, I'm just saying it as like a cliche type description, you know, the little woman at home, washing, ironing, cooking. I was very much, until I became vegan and then became obsessed with food, I was very much can't cook, won't cook, I'm a bad cook. And I was proud of it, because I never, ever, ever wanted to lean into the female stereotypes. And I was always very focused on my career as well. And I used to have it in my head, you know, well, you know, why can't a man be at home with the children? And I always had all these ideas. And then that slowly started to change, because I really wanted to become a mum. And I'd focused quite a lot of my energy on my career. And that's why with my podcast, A Womb of One's Own, that's where that came from, that passion to discuss, you know, like the biological clock and the modern day woman and the challenges we face in terms of, you know, how long we wait and whether we want children at all, etc. I started to feel in the last few years, and also had had a couple of things that could have presented fertility challenges like fibroids and stuff, I started to feel like I really wanted to become a mum, and changed my, I don't know, I just became really like desperate for family, a baby. And then but I still was very much like, why should women have to breastfeed? I don't agree that women should be. And it, you know what was really funny? It was only until lockdown that I started to, when I was doing all my mad online shopping and stuff, I was saying about the dress, I was worried about like things like nappies and stuff, because everything went mad. Everyone started shopping online, everything shut and everything was running out. So I woke up one night at like 3 a.m. and was freaking out thinking, no, what if I don't have nappies, this and that? And then I was like, what if I can't breastfeed? I'm going to have to get formula. So I started like bulk buying formula and all of this. But the funny thing is with the whole breastfeeding thing, and that's when it comes into like Mother Nature versus feminism for me, was what I realized was, and as a vegan as well, well, I feel like I can't even call myself a strict vegan anymore, but like because of the whole formula thing, I was like, okay, if I don't breastfeed, I'm going to feed a formula, and the formulas are always dairy. You can get soy formula, but they're not good for the babies, you know? So I was like, well, then I have to buy dairy formula. And then I was like, no, I never even thought of this. Then when summer came along, I really wanted to breastfeed. And all of a sudden, my brain just changed into wanting to do this thing, which felt very maternal. I'm not saying if you don't breastfeed, it's not maternal, because that's it. You can still obviously have this really close bond with the baby, whether you breastfeed or not. But as anyone who's breastfed knows, physically and emotionally is something that can, not always, make you feel very close to the baby. And so all of a sudden I'm like this woman who's like breastfeeding. And prior to that, I've been very like anti the pressure on women to breastfeed because I was such a feminist about it, if that makes sense. And also as well during lockdown, I couldn't really work. And I felt so ill during pregnancy as well. I took really early sort of maternity leave, stopped doing my radio shows, and was very much at home all the time. And Brian was still working and has really been the one financially holding it all together anyway. And so those roles have changed. Like I spent all of my life, way into my late 30s, always financially supporting myself, never reliant on anyone else. Properties that I bought or any investments that I've made, all me, never was funded by anyone. And when I say funded by anyone, I don't mean it in a rude way, but do you know what I mean? I always kind of would like half judge women, you know, who would be like, just like not, you know, like I thought not doing anything. Little did I know motherhood's like the hardest job ever. And even silly things like divorce cases where you'd hear stories of like people getting 50%, women getting 50%. And I'd think, why don't they just work for their own thing? Until I got into the situation that I'm in now. And I'm like, it is so difficult. And of course, you're going to be at home a lot. Of course, you can't just carry on with your work or your career as you used to before. Of course, you're going to need to be like, you know, yes, I've worked hard anyway. So I'm not saying that I would have needed Brian to 100% support me. But of course, someone who isn't then able to work because they're a mum is going to need some sort of support, whether it's from the government or their partner or whatever, or maybe they've then got to work and be a mom at the same time. So then I completely got the whole 50-50 thing, because I was like, you spend years being a parent, you're not, it does kind of stop you from doing what you used to do if you were a career person, you know. So this is where for me it's all been completely challenged. And sometimes I'll speak to female friends who will say, but this is the natural way we're supposed to be, or this is how, you know what I think is really funny? I feel like modern day society has almost gone back to more, in some ways we've become very progressive, but then lately I've seen things, especially like if you look on Instagram and stuff, I feel like I've seen things return to a very traditional, that's why you're seeing a lot of girls like sharing about breastfeeding and even silly things like, people used to be not condemned for having children as teenagers and young women, but it was very much like, get your education first, save money first. Oh no, she had a child, she's 20, only 20. 20 is a very fertile age, but we would always condemn it before. Now I'm seeing a lot of people being very celebratory of being young mums, you know, like reality stars. People. Do you get what I mean? So I almost feel like there's been like a return to celebrating the traditional feminine role.
I suppose actually the whole point of feminism is to give everyone the choice. So what's brilliant about what you've observed is that actually, yeah, do you know what? I would say 10 years ago, teen mums in the tabloids were hounded and they were chastised and it was looked down upon. But the whole point of feminism is that we are fighting for equality and for the choice. So everyone has the choice to live their life the way they want to. And yeah, you've made a brilliant point there. I think we've also touched on some stuff from that I covered in the last episode of Baby on the Brain, episode 8, which was with Jolie Brearley, who founded Pregnant Then Screwed. And the world is not set up to support women in pregnancy or motherhood. The cost of childcare is the base rate. The cost Shocking. Of childcare yeah. is the reason that women are set back so often. And there was a really scary stat, and I hope I can remember it. I think it was that by the time a woman has a child who is the age of 13, their pay is a significant percentage behind any man who started their career at that same age because of the motherhood penalty. So you've touched on some really interesting points. Sarah, Laura, I don't know if you guys wanted to jump in.
Yeah, no, certainly. Just to pick up on the breastfeeding point, because I think I had an interesting, similar journey to you, actually, Sarah Jane, in that I was kind of like, well, I know it's advocated for, but no, it's my body and I'm not sure that's my route. And then actually when I had Annabelle, and I don't know if I should admit it, but purely through ease and just pure convenience, I suddenly became quite the opposite. And I was like, no, I will breastfeed. And this was prior to lockdown, but I will breastfeed anywhere, everywhere. And if you look and judge me, more for you, kind of thing. Because actually, it felt quite empowering to be like, no, I'm sustaining my child in this moment. Mm. And the fact that you don't want me doing this in a cafe or somewhere else is your problem, not my problem.
Yeah, totally.
So actually it then became quite empowering to be like, no, I can do this and I will do this. So I thought it was interesting you said about your journey with breastfeeding, because I agree. I think your opinions change as your journey into motherhood changes, and even what you think you will be like before you have a kid changes yeah. very much from that point to when you have a kid.
Yeah, so, our like idealized parenting is so different than our actual parenting now. It's just, yeah, but I think ultimately what you said about you know, how people have some people have gone back to more traditional roles. Yeah, it is. It's choice, isn't it? I think that's the amazing thing, really, that we have the choice how to have our baby. We have the choice of whether to breastfeed or not. We have so many choices within motherhood and our roles. And, you know, even in our relationship, I've always wanted to be a stay-at-home mom because my mom was.
One of the terms of agreement for marriage.
Yes.
Yeah. I didn't want to get married. Unless she could be a stay-at-home mom.
Because I felt that my mom as a stay-at-home mom really positively influenced myself and my brother. And so it was something that it was very important for me to do. So I'm very lucky that Sarah did not want to be a stay-at-home mom. And so even within our two female relationship, we have, you know, a career go-getter yeah. type and one that loves cooking and baking and
yeah. I was really, really challenged and Fliss, to your point about that kind of tax on women succeeding, is that even though I loved my maternity leave, the thought of extending it was not one that appealed to me. I was like, no, I want to get back to work. I feel like I've missed out. And I feel like actually to give Annabelle what she needs, I need to be challenged and thriving in my work world. And that's not to say, I mean, to your point, Sarah Jane, staying at home as a mum is challenging and thriving in a lot of different ways. But for me, it was getting back to work kind of gave me that drive to then be better for kind of Annabelle in that sense. But it is interesting because at that time was when Laura was like, well, no, I want to take over and be a stay-at-home mum. And so it is just interesting, even within our relationship, our different kind of views on what we deem to be our priorities.
And the great thing about Annabelle going to nursery, sorry, at that point was exactly what you said, Sarah Jane, is that Annabelle was very social. And so actually putting her into nursery, we couldn't have been a better choice for her as well, because Sarah learned at about 9 months that she couldn't be everything to Annabelle. She needed more stimulation. Yeah. And so when we put her into nursery, it was just, we saw her come on in leaps and bounds. Yeah. Even now, where she's in one day a week, just for that social, the social and the skills that they learn.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So I have a bone of contention I want to run by you all. And it's about the outside. It's bringing back that conversation of the outside attitudes and how we can kind of deflect that. And now my upbringing, my mum was a head teacher, so she went back to school quite quickly. You know, you can't really take that much time off. And that was brilliant. She, you know, she's such a career-driven woman. My dad was lucky enough to work for himself, so I had him at home. So I had my dad at home all the time. The phrase daddy daycare is the bone of contention I want to bring up right now, because it is, it for me, it symbolizes everything that I hate about outside attitudes to motherhood and pregnancy.
I'll hear, and Brian is brilliant, by the way, so hands-on, but like occasionally he might say to someone, I'm babysitting. And I'm like, you're babysitting your own child. What do you mean you're babysitting? Like we are, or he'll say, I'll do that for you. I'll look after it for you. And I'm like, you'll look after her for you because she's 50% your child. So, and is that what you mean when you're talking about?
Yes. Yes, it is. Like the thing is, it sounds like Brian is this cut from the same cloth as Aaron. And, you know, Aaron would call himself a feminist and he does believe in equality.
Yeah,
and he's having a baby girl. He's not going to go on the marches because he's probably more interested in watching the Six Nations with a pint with his mates. But, you know, he's totally there for it. And we had a discussion about shared parental leave and stuff and made decisions around that. But equally, he will be the guy who says, oh, yeah, I'm babysitting. And it will wind me up a treat.
Yeah, like a favour.
Yeah.
Not like a duty because you're a parent, but like a favour because it's actually the mum by default. And then we'll just dip in and be like the babysitters. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for me, I don't know, the outside influence on that is, how annoying do I want to be? Am I going to be that woman that's constantly like, you're not babysitting, it's your child? Or actually, he's not doing daddy daycare, it's 50% his genetics.
Yeah, 100% you should say that. Because I think it's good to remind people of the way they're viewing something. Even for me, I have to, like, even the other day when I had those couple of days, nights away, and then the next day, Brian had to go to work and he took the baby with him and she was sat with him in a meeting and all kinds of mad stuff was going on. And then a mutual friend of ours came and grabbed her and had her for a couple of hours. But I felt weird that he had given her to somebody else rather than I had. I felt like, oh my goodness, now my child's with someone. Even though I know this girl and she's great and she teaches children and she's amazing, I still felt weird that. But that's on me though, because really he's 50% of the equation. So if he feels that he trusts the situation, do you know what I mean? So I then did what everybody else is doing by saying, you're the default parent and they're 20% of it and they will do a favor. Really, it's for me to then go, no, he's doing it, so I'll let him do exactly what he's going to do. Because he would never feel weird if during my watch of summer I then gave to somebody or what. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it would just totally be like, your mum, you do whatever you want to do and tell me about it after, and I'll go, oh, interesting. So I think that sometimes, and I don't, obviously you'll be able to feedback and tell us how you feel when the baby comes, but like, we probably do end up like shooting ourselves in the foot as well, because as much as we want to correct the outside world, we then probably do, some of us slip into the mode of thinking, no, I know best, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, definitely. I think ultimately that phrase, daddy daycare, is so symptomatic of how men are made to feel like they're lesser of the parent. And a lot of the times that isn't the case, that they don't want to be that. But I feel that some of they're kind of predisposed to be. And it makes sense, you know, when we've had the baby, the maternal instinct is there. You've just grown this thing inside of you for 9 months. So, of course, you're going to want to, like, be in charge of it. But ultimately, yeah, it's good for, it's good for them to want to step up and to step up, because they are. They're 50% parent, and they are just, they should be able to be just as trusted, I guess, as you are with them.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so here's another question for you both. How young is too young to start talking to your kids about gender equality and women's rights?
Well, you know what's funny? When I was pregnant, I was downloading all of these very sort of like feminist, like women's rights, but for nurseries. I think it was like on Etsy or something. I was like, feminist nursery artwork. And I had all this stuff and books and things. Yeah. And I was like, I'm going to do this and that. And then I think by the time she came along, I was so exhausted. It just ended up being like, what did go on the wall? I think it was bunny rabbits.
Oh, amazing. Nice. I've tried to find a really nice Kamala Harris print.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, from when Kamala Harris took someone down, didn't she? She said, I am talking.
Yeah, I'm speaking.
Yeah, I am speaking, and I really want that as a print. Sorry, go ahead, Sarah Jane.
That's amazing. I love that. No, I just think it's funny because there's so many things that I've always been really, I think obviously being that she's my first, I've always been really fascinated with, like I say, nature nurture. So things like how much they absorb, you know, when they hit milestones, not that there's any race, yeah, but just like watching her and just finding it so fascinating, everything that she absorbs. And so things that I'm into, like music or, I don't know, speaking or wanting to teach her how to read, like there were all these ideas that I had of things I wanted to introduce her to straight away. And I kind of did and have, but then I also then just went into survival mode of like, I'm knackered. So there are, yeah, just times when like I'll whack on baby TV and children, there are just certain things that I would be like, no, I'm never going to do this, I'm never going to do that. And then in the end, I just fell into like, not fell into the trap, but there are more often than not, I'll just think, right, what am I doing today to survive? So yeah, it's really funny because I do think, I think it's great, an idea in your head about how early you want to introduce anything positive, and especially in modern times, you know, the idea of,
yeah,
women being very, I think it will come naturally as well. I think if those are your ideas and your sentiments, then it will just come naturally in terms of how you, in conversations that you have as well. And the woman that runs the nursery that Summer goes to, because they're very excellent at development, but they're also very big on kindness. So it's nicely balanced. It's not like we're forcing the kids to be really clever, but then they're all mean. And it's also not, oh, we let them do what they want, but then they're really kind. It's actually very big on development, but then they're also lovely. And so she's really, Brian and I find her really fascinating, the woman that runs nursery. And so we're always asking her questions. And the other day we said to her, when is it that they start to like think about dolls are for girls? Or when is there any, actually she said these days boys and girls pick up the dolls equally, and she doesn't really, yeah, notice there being much of a difference. It's more, would be more what the parents would introduce. But she said that at around, did she say 2 years and 9 months? It was really specific. She said, then there's this real knowledge of, you're a boy, I'm a girl, you might have short hair, I might have long hair. She said there's a little bit of an awareness of that type of thing around, yeah, that age. And I just thought that was really interesting. And I know your little one, is she two?
Yeah, I was just counting. I think she's turning 3 in July.
Oh, so she's at that age where she might start to, Well, I mean, what is her experience of boys and girls and herself?
Yeah, I think that is exactly right. If she sees in a book someone with short hair, she will say it's a boy. And so we have the job to tell her that no, not all boys have short hair and not all girls have long hair. And we try to point out examples where in different situations where that isn't the case. So I'd say you're definitely right that by now she does start to see those differences. Mm. But I think that it's as you said, it just creeps in because these are the values that we have. So we do have some kind of feminist books and things like that for her, like of women that have done great things. And as a LGBT couple as well, we try to make sure her books that she reads at night have a lot of different representation, different races, different family dynamics, different like girls doing amazing things. So so I think for us, we feel as much as an LGBT couple, we know that her family dynamic is going to be questioned and things when she's at school. Mm. So we want her to have this innate sense of self and know that her family, that all families are different, and that's absolutely fine. Her family is different than these people, but at the end of the day, you know, families are made by love. And the same thing to me with speaking about gender. We want her to know that she can do anything. And so we've kind of started that from a very young age, but in a very age appropriate way, just about how amazing she is and how she can do anything she wants, and that her friend Toby can also do anything he wants. And so I think it's just it creeps in because this is the kind of people that we all are.
Yeah, and actually when you said all that, it reminded me when you said about the books, we have because obviously in your mind, you know, you're mentioning LGBT in terms of how, you know, you want her to absorb that. And in my mind, I'm thinking about how we have a multiracial family. So a lot of the books I was making sure, there's a book and I think it's called like My Family or something. And it's literally got all these different families with gay couples, with black and white couples, with every reading. And it's such a beautiful book. And I love that kind of thing, and there's so much of it about, and those are the books that fill her shelf. And so I guess naturally I was really keen for her to be exposed to that, and so I just, you know, that's my hope for her, is that she will never question something and think that's strange and just be like, oh yeah, because, you know, my friend that's his mum and that's his mum, or oh yeah, and because he's mixed race, and that, you know, like so that was always very much an important thing for me in a slightly different way, but still, like you say, diversity. Yeah. And actually for World Book Day, even though she'll never remember, only from pictures, I dressed her up as a character called Rocket from a book called Look Up. And it's a little brown girl. She's really clever. She's into like space. And it's a really funny story as well. And, you know, it's quite lighthearted. But I just thought for me that represented, you know, my passion to want to encourage her as, you know, this little, you know, mixed race girl who can go after whatever she wants. And obviously, you know, studying space hasn't typically been something that, you know, a traditional thing that women have been into. So I think as much as I might say now I'm in survival mode, I had all these grand ideas, I actually have followed through on some of them in a bit more of a natural way, you know, like, well, Book Day, okay, I know, who can I use as a great sort of character and as a role model that is where it's not too contrived. And the picture, she looked quite, I managed to find a really cool astronaut outfit for her that fit her as well. It's like a baby astronaut outfit. Oh, yeah, so it ended up being quite a cool picture. But I think you're right, I think it is about, you know, how we are will naturally come across and shape. Well, it will just give them fertile ground to then make their own decisions. Yeah. But they certainly won't be restricted thinking, oh, that's strange. Anything that's different is strange, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Exactly. And that's all we want at the end of the day, is for them to be able to have those choices and be able to do whatever they set their mind to.
So my final point on this is, would you call yourself a feminist mother, and do you think it's been an easy ride?
Never an easy ride, hell no. I can answer that straight away. No, do you know what, I don't know, this is gonna sound stupid, I feel like I don't know what feminist means anymore, because it's interesting, from this conversation it's, well, actually, I feel like now I've reclaimed the word in my mind from what you guys said, and that was, it's about choices. Whereas I started to feel like the word feminism or being a feminist was synonymous with anti-traditional woman. Mm. And actually, what if you want to do something that is very traditionally what is considered feminine, because that's how you feel, you know? And so is that, does that mean you're not a feminist? You know, so I started to become a little bit confused by the word in recent times. And I think that if what it means is choice and allowing ourselves to feel like we can choose, and how you have this amazing partnership that's so unique and covering each other's bases, which is so great, like that is being a feminist. And if that's what that means, then yeah, I definitely am a feminist mum and want to continue in that vein. And no, it's not been easy. It's been really hard, really, really hard, but the most rewarding job ever. And the irony of maternity leave holiday, no, it's like harder than being at work. Like we're like, I'll go to work, scrambling out the door. No, I'm kidding. So yeah.
Time to think.
Yeah. Even just a little break, even just going to the loo, or just the amount of times in the early days with Summer where I'd like take her to the loo with me, I'd be sat there on the loo, you know, like you're glued to the baby. Like it's so difficult.
Yeah.
And I used to think, how do a lot of, you know, parents, and not just mothers, but any parent that is like the key caregiver, how do they survive like mentally and physically in that first year? Like I feel like people don't really fully talk about how difficult it is, because I thought some of the things I'd done in my life were difficult, and they pale into insignificance when it comes to being a new mum. Don't want to scare you, please, but...
My God, I've only got 3 weeks left.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you look really good for 3 weeks left. I would have been falling apart at the seams by now.
It's from the nipples up, my friend. Laura, Sarah, same question to you guys.
Yeah, I would definitely feminist mums, definitely for sure. And yeah. This next baby, whether it's a boy or a girl, I think it'll be great for us to be able to do exactly what we've done with Annabelle with the next baby and give them the choices. And if it's a boy and he likes glitter and tutus like his sister, then that's great too. And yeah, so I think it's just choice
and empowerment. And I think as long as we continue to show that there are options and whatever they want to do is fine by us, then if that makes us feminists, then definitely we are feminist mums. And I think to Sarah Jane's point, it's never easy, but I think as they get older, it becomes, the work you put in becomes more and more evident, and that makes it so worthwhile, because the moment your child walks out there and defends their right to choose is a really empowering moment. And the moment they turn around and say no to being a stereotype or a perceived concept is just amazing. And I mean, we're only 2.5 years in, and just seeing the kind of capabilities they have to perceive their own strength and then tell others about it is just incredible.
I think I want Summer to be friends with your little girl. She sounds like a great influence.
Sarah, Laura, I just wanted to grab you for 2 more minutes and just kind of understand what your key takeaways were from this conversation, because I think mine were, you can be a feminist, you can be a mum, you can have a feminist pregnancy. It's not going to be easy, but you don't need to change the world because the next generation are going to do it for us.
And we're changing the next generation, really.
Absolutely, yeah. So what was your key takeaway?
I think to your point, there was so much that we covered. And I think it's the fact that I know everyone always says motherhood is a journey, but I think even adding that kind of feminist aspect into that journey is really important. And I think the fact that, whether you're the biological mum or the not biological mum, it's just clear that becoming a parent is going to do something for your opinion on feminism. And Annabelle wants to cover my mouth. Not sure she agrees with me. But yeah, and I think it's important that we focus on empowering our children, and while doing that, not forgetting that it's important to empower us as well. So to Sarah Jane's point about making sure that you're kind of staying focused on what's important to you as well is also going to be key to your journey.
Yeah, definitely. Laura?
Yeah, definitely agree. And I think as much as we talk about making sure we're empowering our children and you know, doing, make, trying to make them aware of so much, also we just let them be kids and let them like what they like. And I think, ultimately they're way more attuned to, what's the word? Like, I want to say that she's way more aware than we give her credit for, but that's not the word. They're way more astute than we give them credit for. And I think, just by being the best parents we can be and the best people that we can be, we will influence our children positively.
Well, that's all for this episode of Baby on the Brain. A special thank you to my co-hosts, Sarah and Laura, and our guest, Sarah Jane. You can tweet us at Stylist Magazine, find us on Instagram, and use the hashtag StylistBabyOnTheBrain. Next week will be the final episode in this series, and I couldn't do an episode on the big, scary return to work without dragging my own boss in to talk about it. So I will be joined by Lisa Smazarski, Editor-in-Chief of The Stylist Group, to discuss life after maternity leave. Remember to subscribe, share, and leave us a review on the App Store.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.